Welcome to the Bank Marketing Show, the podcast that engages and informs you for success in today's marketplace. It's the show that will make you a better marketer with trends, tactics, and inspiration from experts and industry leaders. If you're wanting to impact your personal success and position your bank as the best choice in your market, you're in the right place. Now let's dive into today's show with your hosts, Chris and Dan.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Bank Marketing Show. We're very glad to have you with us for another great episode. We've got a really great guest today and are excited about having one of the banking industry leaders with us, with Gordon Fellows. So, guys, welcome to the show, Gordon and Dan.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be with you.
Yeah, welcome, Gordon.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, good to have you. So, Gordon, we've done some work together, obviously, the Mississippi connection here and all of that. And with Dan's agency also obviously deeply entrenched in this industry too, as we have been planning out podcast guests and episodes, we've been really excited about having a State Banking Association leader with us. So really, really glad to have you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners. Bank marketers are some special folks. So it's I know y'all got broad reach, and this is an exciting conversation to have.
Yep. Very good. Very good. Well, cool. Well, so let me give our listeners just at least a quick run through of who you are and what you do. We were talking before the show, Gordon, your current role is president and CEO of Mississippi Bankers Association. You've been in that role for a couple of years now, but I did not realize that you've been with the association for 10 years, back to 2012. So that's really cool. I know that you have a passion, and we'll talk about this some, but you have a real passion for government relation initiatives and some of those things that the association is certainly in a crucial leadership role with as it's related to our industry. And, you know, both in state and federal affairs and levels. So I'm looking forward to our listeners and to Dan and I learning more about all of that with you, your involvement with ABA Bank PAC committee and some of the other delegate roles that you have and board memberships and all of that with ICBA and ABA and all of that. So we're looking forward to really hearing more about that. And one of the really cool things too, Dan and I were actually talking in the lead up to this too. And Dan, you were saying, okay, let me get this straight. He was in the furniture industry, supply chain, you know, stuff and all of that, spent a good bit of time, from what I understand, Gordon, based in China and all of that. And now he leads the State Banking Association. So we're
I had a short stint in that furniture time frame too, as a strategic marketing manager. That was my title for 18 months. So I got to play in the marketing world for just a little bit and know just enough to make myself sound stupid. So, but yeah, it's been a unique career path. We'll get into that, I'm sure, in a little bit.
I bet that will be just enough to know what you're talking about.
So, I don't know.
Well, we'll let our marketing professional listeners determine that, right? So. Yeah, but you I knew you were a native of Tupelo, Mississippi here and graduated from Ole Miss. And so you're deeply entrenched with the state here, but I'm also looking forward to hearing more from you about how your spans and perspective on the banking industry as a whole has grown over the years. So, Gordon, we're excited to have you, man.
Yeah, well, thank you. And just, I guess, for a bit of background. So, yeah, my career path has been kind of different. I was an international studies major at Ole Miss. So if anybody's listening that has kids that are looking for something to do in college and are interested in sort of learning about the rest of the world, the Croft program at Ole Miss is fantastic. It's a world-class international relations degree. And so I went through that program. I kind of had two interests in college. One was, you know, where does Mississippi fit in the world? And how do we sort of project our state forward? And the other was sort of, where do business and politics cross, and how does that have an impact on the economy in Mississippi? And sometimes those are pretty parallel, but sometimes they're pretty divergent interests. And so I've had this kind of unique career path that's kind of let me kind of pursue both of them in different ways. So yeah, right out of school, I'd spent a lot of time in college in DC, interning and working around campaigns and being around political stuff and political advocacy. So that is a passion of mine. Right out of school, I kind of had this idea that I'd go to DC and work on staff for one of the members of the Mississippi Congressional Delegation. And that was kind of a goal of mine. And then after spending time studying abroad and thinking more about, you know, kind of the importance of business, I kind of figured coming out of college, I had enough political experience and I really needed to get into the business world and kind of figure out where the rubber meets the road on the challenges that employers have keeping people at work. You know, the world was changing an awful lot in 2005 when I graduated from college. It's changing an awful lot now too. And so sort of what are those trends and what does that mean? And what are the challenges that business have to face? And kind of saw some of that and thought I needed to kind of dive into that side of things instead of political stuff. So I spent the beginning of my career working for a local furniture manufacturer that was based in Tupelo, my hometown, that had a global supply chain sourcing components out of China. I lived in Shanghai and kind of ran the purchase end, you know, the China end of that. We were flowing components back into the U.S. to run final assembly in U.S. plants. So we were trying to, you know, keep employment in the U.S. as best we could, while also kind of keeping our prices competitive with direct imports. And so it is kind of funny today to sort of, funny is not really the right word, but I'm really thankful that I'm not in that world right now, because there's a lot of strain and challenge on global supply chains. And I think we'll probably get into that when we talk about economics in a little bit. But that was a really cool way to begin a career. I actually went back to China later with a smaller company. I was approaching my 30th birthday. I remember this moment very well. I was approaching my 30th birthday. It was 4 a.m. I was in a factory. We were trying to ship 6 containers of storage ottomans to Kohl's, and the trucks were coming to pick them up at 8, and we were working all night to get the stuff done. And I was like, if I don't quit this now, like, what am I doing? Right. So like it's been a fun 6 years. It's been a fun, great way to start a career. I've got to experience a lot of the world, but I, you know, like I said, I have these two divergent interests, and one of them was global, and one of them was sort of where Mississippi business and politics cross. And I was kind of thinking late at night in a factory shipping storage ottomans to Kohl's, it's time to turn around and make an adjustment. And I do want to be clear that moment I was not working for a Mississippi company. I was working for a much smaller direct importer, not somebody that was also making stuff in the U.S. at that point. So that was in early 2012. And I left that company and moved back to Mississippi. I did the thing that all millennials do. I'm one of the geriatric millennials, right? I'm born in 1982. So that puts me at the top of the millennial spectrum, I guess. I did that cool thing where you move in with your in-laws and your parents, right? And you don't have a job. All the millennials do it. It's something that we all need to experience once, right? So then I went down to Jackson, the Mississippi State Capitol, and started networking, trying to figure out, you know, how could I sort of rekindle those sort of political relationships that I had from my collegiate experience. And the Bankers Association just happened to be looking for a lobbyist. And so my resume got to Mac Dever, who was my predecessor in the executive role at the MBA. And Mac hired me. And that was a risky hire, right? There probably, I'm sure there were a number of folks who wanted that job that had direct, you know, experience working in the state legislature, but he saw value in hiring somebody who kind of had a different sort of skill set and set of experiences. So that was 10 years ago, and it's been a great decade with the Bankers. And it is interesting, right? There are, you know, there are state banking associations in every state, and some states have two, and we work with all of them. So I get to know my counterparts at every state banking association, and it's sort of a recurrent joke. I'm the only one in any of the state associations that have a career path remotely similar to mine. So it's been an interesting ride, but in a lot of ways, you know, the last 2 years, there's been so much sort of challenge the banking industry's had to deal with that it's those 2012 year, the year 2012, it's really only 10 years ago in a lot of ways. I think we all agree that it really feels like it's about 100 years ago in a lot of ways. So a lot of water has gone under the bridge sort of mentally for everybody through the pandemic.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a really interesting, you know, I think most state banking associations, like you said, like people come up through banking, and maybe you've, you know, you've been running a bank for a while and you want to start doing something else and you get into the association or kind of work your way up through it. But I think, you know, you have a unique background, but it's interesting to see a kind of global perspective, you know, brought into a state association, because so much of what, you know, a lot of banks, local banks, community banks in a state do is, you know, locally focused. So having, you know, someone in your position that has that perspective and can bring it into the you know, politics and advocacy discussions is really interesting. You started to hint at it, but I wanted to ask kind of, you know, you in the past 10 years, you've been at the association through kind of the big recession and housing bubble and the late, you know, aughts or whatever we call them. And, you know, and then now through the pandemic. So can you talk a little about how banking has changed in the last, you know, in the 10 years you've been part of the
association? You know, yeah, that's a really good question. And I guess my, you know, the simple answer is industry consolidation, right? And that's been driven a lot by, you mentioned the aughts. You know, when I started the MBA, we were still in the country was still in the process of implementing Dodd-Frank, right? And there was this sort of, there's just this groundswell of regulatory burden that was hitting the industry. You know, we've seen a lot of mergers in our state and a lot of acquisitions, in part, you know, because banks have got to achieve scale to absorb sort of that continuously increasing cost. You know, and I guess that's kind of always happened, but it seems like it's been worse since Dodd-Frank. And you know, on the flip side of it, I guess in the past, when you know, when there would be consolidation, you know, you'd have new market entrants, right? There'd be de novo formation, and everybody, I think, knows the story there, right? There just hasn't been that. But I think in 2007, 2007, we were averaging 200 new banks a year in that time frame, and you know, probably more. And we hadn't gotten close to that cumulatively since, you know. So you continue to see banks go away in large part, I think, especially in rural places like Mississippi, in large part due to regulatory pressure. Also, I think, you know, the interest rate thing is real, and sort of, you know, there are real management challenges around succession and all that stuff too that drive some of those decisions. But you know, we see a lot of consolidation. And as that happens, you know, that changes the complexity of the industry. It changes the services aren't going away, right? I mean, I think in our state, we've probably have seen more and more services, right? And banks are figuring out new and innovative things they need to do to reach customers where they are and to help customers move forward into a more digital economy and all the challenges that come with that. So it's not like services are going away. Banks are getting more complex in what they do. But, you know, part of that is, you know, it makes it harder to exist as a small independent. And so that's one of the things we think about a lot. How do we help maintain across the spectrum the different sort of charter sizes, and what's our role as a state association to make sure we provide all the resources we can to smaller banks so they can continue to serve their communities.
So Gordon, bringing that 10-year thought process even to more current day and where we are, and we all know that the pandemic has and will continue to have ripple effects. And, you know, today what we're looking at is, as far as issues at the consumer level, the banking level, all of the above, is rising interest rates and supply chain issues and inflation and, you know, all these other kind of things. So, so where do you see that as kind of the pulse of the industry, I guess, today and maybe in the short-term future?
Yeah, you know, it feels like in a lot of ways, we're still waiting for the other shoe to drop from the shutdown here, right? Like the credit issues just haven't materialized yet, which is fantastic. And I think that speaks to the sort of quality of the government response early in this thing. And frankly, to the, you know, the important roles the banks played in getting those PPP loans out. We were, I think, you kind of look at the, if you look at the pandemic from an employment perspective, right? Employment, and then it just tanks. And then immediately when PPP loans started to go up, the numbers started to turn around. It took it a while, but it's back, right? I mean, and now to the point where we're still having the opposite issue, right? It's we're still working through the how do we get people back to work phase, and what does the new work environment look like, right? And what are the challenges that comes with an adjusted set of expectation from employees now, right? So those are still going to be there. We're going to have to keep working through those as an industry, I think. I hope that that means that there's opportunities for banks, right? Like back office folks, right, that don't have to be customer facing. Do they have to be in your markets now? I don't know. You know, I mean, that changes your culture when you start hiring outside of market folks. But you know, certain roles are pretty talent specific, and so I know banks were thinking about that kind of thing. And is that create a new? It's in one way, just like any other SWOT analysis, right? In one way, it's a threat. In one way, it's an opportunity. And where do you land on it, and how do you harness it, right? So there are a lot of things that I think are going to continue to come out of sort of the post-pandemic or post-economic part of the pandemic that we'll have to continue to work through. I think the tail is going to be long. And, you know, we talked about, you know, my experiences in China. I still have friends in Shanghai, right? I don't talk to them, but I keep up with them on social media. I guess if Facebook Messenger is a way to communicate or Instagram or whatever, right? And people I know haven't left their apartment in 40 days now, right? And that says something about what's going on in their economy over there, right? And like it or not, you know, China is still in large part the world's workshop, right? Most of the stuff that we get comes from there. And if Shanghai is a city of 26, 27 million, it's been completely shut down for over a month. It looks like Beijing is going into shutdown. Dongguan and Shenzhen were shut down for a while. They're kind of back now, but they're going to be supply chain ripples that continue for months, maybe even years, because of all this. And so things are going to have to get resorted out. And I guess I say all that to say, it's going to be the complexity is going to continue. And I think there's a real opportunity for banks to market themselves, local community banks in small towns, to market themselves as expertise providers, right? As your customers and your folks have to deal with all of those sort of challenges, interest rates, supply chain, people working, how are people going to work? What can the bank do to provide guidance and insight and expertise to help your customer work through it? I think that for an audience of bank marketers, that's a question that I think, you know, if your bank figures out how to answer, make sure you're taking credit for that, because I think your customers will find value.
Yeah, that's a great point. I do a lot of thinking about, you know, about those types of messages, because, you know, in digital marketing these days, it's not about just being there. You've got to stand out, but beyond that, you've got to connect and you got to be there solving problems. You mentioned, you hinted at, like, you know, big bank and kind of fintech marketing these days is very much focused on tiny slices or tiny problems, or you get access to your paycheck 2 days early, those types of things. And it drives customers. And, you know, so you're talking earlier about, like, small banks innovating and, you know, changing up their services. I think that's, you know, key to make it kind of come out in the marketing and say, like, look, we know how to help you. We're here. You learn that in the PPP loan cycle when, yeah, you know, the bigger banks might not have responded to you fast enough. So it's really interesting that it's still sort of, you know, it's still sort of here. There's still a you know, message wedge that banks can use.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's the SBA Small Business Appreciation Week this week. We actually were just invited yesterday to the Jackson Regional Office sort of Small Business Awards deal, and they recognized the MBA as a key partner in executing PPP, and that was a reminder to me, right? Like, we as bankers are kind of like tired of talking about it, but there's still a lot of value to make sure we're getting within the communities, right? Because there are still a lot of folks that when they got that loan in May of 2020 or even January of 2021, they weren't real sure what was going to happen for their business, and they weren't really sure if they're going to still be here right now. And most of them are, in large part, you know, because of those credits.
So, have you seen these trends? You know, have you seen some banks in Mississippi start to use some of these, change up their messaging, or use some of these trends? Or, like, can you talk a little about what you've seen?
Yeah, so I've noticed. You mentioned social media, right? And I noticed during PPP, like, a lot of banks started to get more specific about sort of how they were helping folks with their social media. And and this is going to, I'm going to start to bleed into the advocacy conversation here a little bit that I know we're going to sort of tee up for later. So I won't go too deep into this, but you know, in my mind, banks traditionally, like, you go out and you do good stuff in your community, and it's just sort of, you know, it's day to day, and it's what you expect, and it's what your management expects. And you just kind of say, I did this cool thing and I did it. And that's what we always do. And we always do the good thing, and we support our community, whether that's Little League team or the financial literacy program at the school, or making a LMI loan, or helping a vet through the Federal Home Loan Bank program, you know, put a ramp at their house, right? Those are just sort of the things that the banks do kind of every day that make differences, but they don't always take credit for it. You know, it's sort of ingrained in the industry to just sort of say, well, we did it and that's our job. And you know, that's always what we do. And we're going to continue to always do that. And I kind of think PPP was a lesson, particularly of like, let's make sure we're taking credit for the things we're doing in our community, specifically on social media. So I feel like I've seen a lot more of those type of posts, right? Not just the, we made this loan type of stuff, but the post about, you know, we were in the hospital and we gave some food to the nurses, right? That was a pandemic thing that everybody was doing. Right. And so now that sort of has continued to, now we're making posts about, okay, a tornado went through our market. Right. And we were there for the recovery, and the bank's always been there for the recovery, but sort of taking credit for it, telling the story that the bank's done to be helpful in getting the community back on its feet. I think bank marketers all should have that sort of front of mind, when a crisis hits, I know my bank's going to do something. And let me help make sure I capture that and push that out, because it helps the brand of the bank, right? More importantly, it helps the community. But make sure your customers know you're doing it. You know, they'll find value in you as an institution.
Yeah, and I mean, Gordon, you make a great point. One of our previous podcast guests even brought out the fact that, and this isn't a guesstimation, this is a fact, that the younger generations now are willing to pay more, if needed, to do business with a company or business that is making an impact in people's lives and that is making a difference. And that's what they want to be engaged with. So that's not to insinuate that banks charge more, but what they should do is what you're talking about, is developing that persona and carrying that out. Yes, social media is obviously an ideal way to do that, but even in the rest of their marketing schema, so that they are doing exactly what you say, is sharing those stories. And it's not anymore about, you know, running a print ad to be competitive on CD rates. That's not the story. You know, the story are the kind of things that you mentioned, for sure, Gordon.
Yes, the CD ad is the great example, right? Everybody used to run those in the newspaper. And I guess with digitization, I guess if I learned anything about marketing in my short stint as a marketer, is that content is king now, right? And so however you're, whatever the medium you're going down, whatever that swim lane is, making sure your content is right to draw your customers is ultra important. And for us, you know, that means one thing for Bank of America, if they have the ability to run these ads that I think are really good about like banking everywhere all the time, and the people at the wedding reception, and they're, you know, they're Venmoing money, or the dad is planning for the next daughter's wedding. You know, I think that's a really good television ad. A lot of community banks don't have that kind of buying power, right? So there, I think their branding has to be, you know, the community is the brand, right? And so what are you doing to generate the stuff you do every day to generate development and growth and support for your community? And then how do you sort of turn that and make sure that the community knows you're doing it? I think for a lot of community banks, that's where, and that can almost be a repetitive, it can almost be a repetitive exercise for a lot of community banks, because if they're non-competitive markets, you know, it's not like they're stealing from each other that way, right? So it's an interesting thing.
Well, Gordon, you mentioned a little bit about advocacy, and Dan and I were actually talking a little earlier this week about the lead up example that you gave us, that I wanted to toss out to you about the recent IRS reporting proposal and how banks jumped in. And I know as an agency, Dan, a lot of your clients and I know a lot of ours also, that became a significant part of the current messaging on social content and lots of other ways, because that was a big deal for our consumers, our bank customers, right? So that was a great example that you threw out. So what else are you seeing in advocacy and how banks, you know, can be a part of that? Obviously, your role as an association is key in that. And kind of give some thoughts here about banks' involvement in those.
Yeah, I'll do my best to make sure this is not a commercial about trade associations here. But you're right. The IRS reporting piece, what was so cool to me about that and the way we fought that back was it was customer driven, right? And that was a great example of where marketers can be advocates and tying it into the brand campaign. But I think so many banks were asking y'all to help them with content on it because people were coming into the bank and saying, I'm reading this on Facebook or I'm reading it in, you know, the newspaper. Are you really going to report my, you know, account information to the IRS? And the bank would sort of have to say, well, we don't want to, but if this thing goes into effect, you know, we don't even know what the specific policy is. So we don't know where we're going to have to stop. Who knows what we're going to have to report? If you think that's a problem, you need to tell your congressman, you know. And I think everybody in the country thought that would be a really bad thing to do, right? Like, it didn't really matter what party you are. Nobody wants their information shared, right? So everybody cares about privacy. It was really cool to me to sort of watch this sort of social media swell that I knew was customer driven, because I knew customers were coming into their lender's office and saying, this is a problem. I don't want you to have to report this. And the only way to stop it was to engage, right? Like we could all decide, well, the government's going to make us do it, we'll just do it, or sort of say this is a bad idea. And so I think there were a lot of lessons for marketers and your audience in particular in that space, right? When you hear problems from your customers that are government related, you know, A, the trade associations need to know so we can funnel it up our channels, right? And B, I think a lot of times, particularly in today's environment, your customers need to know what you're doing about it, right? I mean, especially if you're perceived to take it their side on it, right? We're making this sort of advocacy effort on behalf of our customers. I think the customers find value in knowing that the banks are advocating for them. That gets tricky, right? Because sometimes these things are partisan. I wish they weren't. Sometimes they are, and so you have to. Marketers be really careful not to wade in a way that could at all be perceived as a partisan weigh in, right? Because when that happens, you know, Michael Jordan sort of famously said, "Republicans buy sneakers too," right? You don't want to offend either side of the aisle. They're probably both your customers. So when partisan fights happen, it becomes a different thing. But if everybody sort of thinks, if all your customers think this is a bad idea, it sort of makes sense to stand up and say, you know, we agree it's a bad idea and we're trying to do something about it. And so, and one thing that I think is really cool, I kind of mentioned this earlier. I coming from the furniture industry, there wasn't a lot of togetherness, right? Competitors were competitors and you didn't really collaborate. You just kind of competed. What I think is so cool about the banking industry is that guys across the street from each other, banks across the street from each other that will compete like cats and dogs for a loan or for a program with a client will sort of step away from that and shake hands and kind of say, as an industry, we need to work together for the betterment of the industry on this thing. Because ultimately, as an industry, if we can help our community wins and both of us win as banks, right? So there's this sort of collaboration approach in the banking industry that is pretty rare, I think. So that happens sort of at the local level. And then kind of at the state level, I mentioned this earlier, you know, we interact with almost every other state banking association in the country pretty regularly, right? So I'm able to trade notes with my colleagues at the Southern State Associations up in New England on the West Coast, you know, kind of all the time. And if we're running into a shared problem, the coordination that we were able to kind of engage in can be really, really helpful, right? And then another layer of that too, right, are the national trade groups. You mentioned, Chris, in my bio, we're both affiliate. The NBA is affiliated with the ABA and the ICBA. So I serve on committees at both groups. We have bankers that are very involved in both groups. And, you know, kind of interacting with your state association is a great way to kind of funnel stuff up into the national trades. And they do an excellent job of kind of helping make sure, you know, the messaging sort of stays the same state to state, and kind of we're all kind of working in the same direction. So, you know, I kind of hate to keep falling back to PPP, but that the pandemic, I think, taught us that collaboration between the states is really important when it comes to how do we respond as an industry together to policy challenges. We made a lot of progress on that, and I think all the banks should be proud about that.
Yeah, that's great. I think, and we've touched on that theme in a couple other episodes as well. Of, you know, when we talk about advocacy, as we're all kind of advocating for the role of community banks in the state. So you compete at the detail level, but you know, if you find a way to raise the awareness or talk about the role community banks play in the actual community, you know, deposits going back out to small businesses and that whole cycle, it helps everybody. The more that your individual bank can talk about it. And I wanted to touch on too, you know, you made the point about the advocacy that the state associations are doing, you know, up to the state government, starts with the community banks advocating for their customers, which is a really, really great point. You know, it's not about, you said, it's not about politics, it's not about partisanship, but the role of the community bank is to, you know, solve problems for customers. And that goes from financial services, you know, to, you know, making sure we're keeping an eye on regulations, keeping an eye on things that will affect them. If you're, you know, if we're talking to, and hopefully we've got an audience here of bank marketers, you know, if this is resonating for a bank marketer, like how can they get involved in the advocacy discussions, you know, in their community or with their state association?
Yeah. So I think the bank marketers get to play a really important role in this, because the conversation we were having earlier about, you know, the role that the marketers play in branding community banks in particular as drivers of their community and sort of tying their bank's brand into their community. It has customer and business benefits. It also has advocacy benefits, right? Like if your bank is seen as integral to the success of your community from policymakers, whether it's in DC or in state capitals, your voice carries a lot of weight, right? And so this is a terrible pun. I use it in my banking school lecture when I talk about advocacy. It's really important for bankers to be storytellers. Get it? Get the pun? Yeah, it's a bad one, isn't it? Sorry. Yeah, doesn't translate well on podcasts
at all. But you had to do it.
Yeah, I take it. If you're telling the story of the cool things that your bank does, you get customer benefit, and I think you get policy benefit too, right? Like policymakers pay attention to that stuff. So if you're engaging in a high school class and teaching them how to budget, tweet about it, right? Tie that into the story you tell, right? Because policymakers know financial literacy is important for the future, right? If you're building a habitat house, right? Or if you're helping finance a habitat house, take the time to make a point to take credit for that locally with your local newspaper or something, because policymakers see those things, and then it gives us the ability as a trade association to sort of point to that and say, look, you know, when we talk about affordable housing, we kind of know what we're talking about because our members do this every day, right? So there's if you tell the story of the positive things your bank does well, you get customer benefit and you get advocacy benefit. And so I get excited when I get to talk to marketers about this stuff, because I think it's a win-win, right? So how do you get involved? Well, you know, reach out to us, right? All the states are always looking for more bankers to be engaged with, and then we can help plug you in with the national folks too. So, you know, I think all of us are on Facebook, we're all on Twitter, we're all on Instagram, LinkedIn, we all have websites. So in a state like us, and like ours, you know, Mississippi, we all kind of joke about it, Chris, you know, we're more of a club than a state. You know, everybody knows somebody. I mean, you and I live 3 hours away from the town I grew up in, but somebody that works for you went to high school with me, right? So, I mean, you know, it's just, we're connected like that in a state like this. So just reach out and we'll all find ways to plug you in. And we're always trying to work, particularly for marketers, to sort of figure out how do we get resources to them to help them sort of do this storytelling that I'm talking about. And I ended on the one on purpose.
I think those are great points, Gordon. My agency is part of, in addition to MBA, we're a part of 5 other state banking associations, right, at various levels. And the ones that have active marketing committees and are bringing in that level of communication and participation and all those kind of things, and making some of that industry level communication as consistently as possible in things that they're doing, and take back to their own banks and march that out on their social, their web, their, you know, even their SEO topic areas, those kind of things. It's we see that working well for the state associations that are doing that actively with groups of marketers, and kind of the opposite for the ones that aren't, to be honest. So I think that's important. Well, so Gordon, before we kind of jump into our lightning round here, give us a little bit of crystal ball and kind of tell us over the next several years, where do you think advocacy for the industry and associations and kind of the pulse of the industry heading forward?
Well, I mean, it's not going to be without challenge, Chris. You know, it's going to continue to be a difficult time, I think. I think the good news is, you know, sort of coming out of this, you know, crisis, right? The pandemic recession, we're in a much better place as an industry than we were coming out of the aughts recession, Dan, to use your term earlier, right? The housing crisis related recession. No, I don't know what you call it either. Was it the fall of 2009 or 2008? Right. I don't know, but the housing crisis related recession. You know, we're in a much better place. And if you kind of look at the, you know, the industry image measurements, the metrics that are out there from different pollsters and stuff, you know, we've kind of been ticking up for a while. But, you know, the whole industry got really tarnished in 08, 09. And you saw that trickle into, you know, college kids deciding they didn't want to go work for a bank. They wanted to go do something different, right? People not trusting banks, all those sort of fundamental things that a bank has to do to manage day to day, we're all kind of questioned. And that's been improving prior to the pandemic. And I haven't seen the latest numbers yet post, you know, 2020, but my bet is that the image of the industry has improved a good bit over the last 2 years. So I, you know, on one hand, we're in a much sort of better place public perception wise. And I think that has borne some fruit in some federal policy wins, right? Like we've had some successes on, like, the IRS proposal, right? And others, right? So on one hand, you know, we've got some more momentum than we've had as an industry in a long time. But on the other hand, the challenges are going to continue to be immense, right? And that's going to be in large part a function of the economy and the challenges that I think we're going to face with inflation and sort of what happens next with the economy. And then how do the regulators respond to all that? What's the Fed do? What's the FDIC do? You know, the CFPB continues to sort of become more aggressive. And how does that trickle down to small banks? So the challenges will continue to come. And, you know, the banks have proven to be really resilient. And to me, the way you meet those challenges is you engage, right? You can take the approach of, well, it's going to happen, and so I'm not going to do anything about it. Or you can take the approach of, I'm going to jump in and do my best to influence it before it happens. And you know, by making the argument that I need this sort of a policy so I can take care of my customers, that gets attention, right? So bankers have to be willing to do that.
Yeah, I was trying to think about something to add on to that, but that's I think that stands alone. You've got to be willing to advocate. You've got to be willing to, you know, get involved. You're from your bank facing out to customers, and from your bank kind of facing out to the state. That's so important. Well, should we hop? I guess let's hop into the lightning round. It's a great place to kind of shift. So, Gordon, we, you know, we ask these same five questions to all of our guests here. So, we'll kind of go through them. But let's start with: can you share, give a personal best, a business best, something great that's happened to you recently?
Yeah. So, I mean, I know we've kind of talked about this already, but we were called into the SBA local office yesterday and recognized as a key resource through PPP And I took that as a real positive thing, not because of the recognition, but for the Bankers Association, but for the recognition of the work the banks did, right? Like I'm going to be proud of the banker effort on PPP for the rest of my career. Like I'm always going to believe that it saved folks in a really tough time, and it turned the economy around. So I used talking to bankers early, and I try to use a healthcare analogy for it. In my mind, it was very much a defibrillator. The economy was having a heart attack, and PPP shocked the system back into place. It'll be easy to sort of move past that professionally for a lot of folks. And you know, it was challenging, and it wasn't fun for anybody, I don't think. But the impact of it was real. And you know, the whole point of trade associations is collaboration. It was a team effort nationwide, right? Of bankers and bank advocates. And so I was just proud to be a little part of that. And I was really proud of the work my members did to take care of their communities with that program.
Great. Favorite book or other resource that you've read recently?
So I'm a big fan of the founding generation. So I like to read about the founders. So I'm going to give you my favorite author in that category. It's Joseph Ellis. Founding Brothers was this sort of joint biography of the whole generation. That's a fantastic book if you're into that. And it's not a new book. It's been out for 20 years now, but I've read it three times. It's fantastic. His book on Thomas Jefferson, The American Sphinx, is great. His book on George Washington is great. So if you're into the founding of the Republic, the formation of the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, how we won the war against Britain, Joseph Ellis is my favorite writer.
What is the most impactful piece of advice you've received?
So when I was in middle school, I had a church league basketball coach that gave all of our team a plaque with a quote from George Hollis, who was an old football coach. And the quote said, "Nobody who gave his best ever regretted it." And I still have that plaque and keep it in my office. And I think that's a really, I've kept that since I was like 12. Which is cool, I guess. But I try to think of that every day when I'm going about the day-to-day stuff that we have to do, right? If you give your best, you're not going to be sad about it.
That's great. I need to write that down when we're done here. what's something that you always tell your staff or your clients? Or your banks, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess I've said it five times now, but it's take credit for the work you do. Right. Particularly when I'm talking to bankers, you all do great stuff. Make sure you're talking about it and getting credit for it in your communities. I feel like I say that to bankers just about every time I talk to them.
And I don't think enough of them do. One of the things that I've known for years working in this industry is it is typically filled with really great people, very caring people. And Gordon, I think an element of that is that a lot of them are humble people.
Yeah.
They like to perform significant things and are kind of humble about it. And while that's a great thing, no doubt, sometimes too, in order to advocate for the industry and for your bank, let's talk about the things that we do well and the impacts that we have, right? So that's a great point.
Yeah, the humbleness point is dead on. And I think part of it too is like, it's also, well, this is what we're expected to do. Just go to work, I do my job, you know? And so that contributes to that too. I'm sorry, Dan, I think I stepped on you there.
No. I was going to say something similar that, you know, but I'll extend to say social media and marketing algorithms, you know, these days don't reward the humble. You've got to be out there. You've got to find the voice and the authentic way to talk about that stuff and get out in the community.
There you go. Dan and I advocate for that all the time for our clients. Let's make some noise about what we're doing. So,
storytellers. I did it again. Sorry.
Yeah. May have to. I'll quote you when I use that in one of
the corniest guy I know said this one time. Yeah, that'll be the quote.
That's great. All right. So as the corniest guy we've had on the Bank Marketing Show, Gordon, if you don't mind, it would be great for people to reach out to you. And there may be a number of our listeners that might like to engage more or get other get input from you, or that are parts of other state banking associations that maybe haven't met you specifically. So what are some ways that people can get in touch with you?
Yeah. Email is gfellows@msbankers.com. Tweeting. I think the MS Bankers account is better than my personal account. So that's @MSBankers. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, Mississippi Bankers Association or MS Bankers Association. And I'm trying to get more engaged in LinkedIn. You can find me in all those places. I used to feel really good about checking emails. Like if you email me, that'd be the best way to get me. But since the pandemic, we're all getting a quadrillion more emails than we ever got. And I always used to get a bunch, but now we're getting even more. So LinkedIn may be the best way to get me these days. Who knows? That may change next month, though.
I was going to say for about a week, and then it'll be overrun too.
Right. That's right.
There you go. That's right. Well, we will share all of that and your book recommendations and other things in the show notes, Gordon. We knew before having you on, this was going to be a great conversation and really valuable for our listenership. And you've given some really great nuggets of information, some great insight into the industry, advocacy, how bankers and bank marketers can get involved and do more. So that's a lot of what we were hoping for out of the discussion today. So we can't thank you enough for joining us.
Well, look, I appreciate the opportunity. It's always good to get to talk about stuff you're passionate about, and bankers really can make a difference and do every day. So it's just fun to get to watch when you sit in my seat. They do so much cool stuff. It's good to get to watch them.
Awesome thought to close on. Well, Gordon, thanks again. We appreciate you very much and look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. To go deeper or get access to some of the valuable nuggets from today's show, go to bankmarketingshow.com. There you'll find episodes, links to resources, and much more. Be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts. And join us next time.